I have to put in my two cents about Howling Moon. How much fun was it? I'm noticing we have knocked holes in the wall up here. That's okay. We have more of that red paint. So, and if you're listening online, Howling Moon is our church's big fundraiser of the year. It is the greatest party in town, and it was just last Friday night. And someone has to put all that together. Every little thing, from where are we going to get those mules that shuttle people in from the parking lot, those little four-wheeler things? What should be the entrance? What's the flow of people so that they won't get all clogged up, you know, trying to get from one place to another? So where should the tables go? How should all the auction items be displayed? And who decides what the minimum bid is and then makes a bid sheet for every single one of those things? Someone has to think about all of that. Even though volunteers did some of that work, somebody has to put it all together. And part of our Howling Moon tradition is that every Sunday after Howling Moon, I get up here and fumble for the words to thank Sherry Conway and Laurie Ross. So I'm
taking money out.
Yeah, okay. There are auction items left, I think, all over the building, so you can still bid on them. So anyway, I hope you feel properly appreciated. You know, sometimes other churches call us and say, "We heard how much money you raised with that thing you do. Tell us how you do it." And, you know, as Sherry tells them, they start to fade. You started how many months in advance? You spent how much money? So, but as I said Friday, our expenses were covered before we started. So we're still counting all the money that came in Friday night. So yeah, it's almost Halloween. What does a monster with bolts in his neck have to teach us? What can we learn from the mad scientist who created him? You hear me say all the time we're co-creators with God, but sometimes creation on our end goes awry and we create a monster. Sometimes we become the monster. The metaphysics of Frankenstein is based on the spiritual principle that our thoughts become our reality, that we are the creators of our own experience. Increasingly, I believe that's why we're here as humans. It's to play with that law of creation. And I believe we only have a glimmer of awareness about how it works, and that means we're not necessarily good at it yet. Although some of you are. But some of us make mistakes and create monsters of varying degrees. So in one sense, the story of Frankenstein is about trying to get around God's laws. Death seems to be a natural law. It happens to all living creatures, plants, animals, humans. But Dr. Frankenstein was bent on overcoming death. For us, his story is about the temporary triumph of getting what you want when you want it, and about the danger of unintended consequences when we work contrary to spiritual laws. So you may know, the book Frankenstein was written by a young woman, Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley, who married the poet Percy Shelley. The Shelleys and Lord Byron, all from England, rented villas near Lake Geneva, Switzerland in the summer of 1816. It turned out to be a cold and stormy summer with torrential rain. So they spent a lot of time indoors, drinking wine and reading poetry and telling ghost stories. And of course, they were all writers. Well, one night, Mary had a nightmare about a monster, and she told it to the others the next night, and then she turned it into a book. This was her summer of Frankenstein. She was 18 years old. At the time, the idea of bringing the dead back to life just fascinated people. An Italian doctor named Luigi Galvani had figured out that nerve impulses are electrical, and he could make the muscles of a frog twitch with a spark from an electrostatic machine. Galvani's discovery was called galvanism, to galvanize. It's a force that causes change, that causes something to become active. So maybe, Mary Shelley thought, a corpse could be galvanized with electricity. And she doesn't say in the book exactly how Dr. Frankenstein created his creature, except that he took body parts from graves and sewed them together and brought them to life. The monster was something that had never lived before in that form. The original book is very metaphysical. Dr. Frankenstein in the book was horrified by his creation. He abandoned the monster and had a nervous breakdown. The monster in the book was brilliant, highly cultured, taught himself to speak French, but he was never accepted in society because of his looks, and he hated Dr. Frankenstein for inventing him. Have you ever thought, why was I born this way? So the monster started killing the people Frankenstein loved. He wrestled with his creator, and they remained locked in this psychological struggle to the end of the book. Hollywood is not that subtle. In the 1931 movie Frankenstein, the monster is just a crude version of a human, but we do get to see the monster being galvanized to life by electricity. So as you watch this famous scene of creation in a minute, think about your own efforts at creating sometimes. You know, affirmations on sticky notes all over the house, desperately asking in prayer, impatient for the outcome. Why isn't this working? In this scene, it's electrical devices and people running around and cranking machines, but the laboratory of a mad creator looked kind of familiar to me. So let's watch this scene. I know what it feels like to be God. In a traditional church, I'd probably tell you not to play God, but in Unity, we know we are a part of God. We create alongside God. We're working within divine energy. we just have to be a little careful on our end. Dr. Frankenstein created from ego and ambition and desire for glory to thwart the natural order of things, and things immediately began to go wrong. The movie also adds the element of a criminal brain in the monster. The assistant had taken the wrong brain to use. And again, that reflected the times. They believed in biological determinism, that heredity caused social problems. It was all nature, not nurture. It had nothing to do with the way you grew up. So a criminal brain would always kill. It was a bad seed and had to be destroyed. Yet we see in Boris Karloff, the vulnerable monster, seeking to connect with people and getting it wrong, and then reacting to how he's treated, which was awful. Villagers wave torches in his face, they whip him, they tease him, they tranquilize him, and when he fights back, he's labeled dangerous. Finally, the villagers chase him into a wooden windmill and burn it to the ground. He dies. Dr. Frankenstein's associate had warned him, "You've created a monster, and it will destroy you." But we kind of do the same, don't we? We create monsters or monstrous situations by thinking we know better, by thinking we have no choice, by the ways we label or demonize people. War and terrorism are monsters we've created with our collective fearful consciousness. Then we get to consider ourselves victims and wave torches in their faces. It's an ancient spiritual teaching that thoughts have creative power. We are creating, whether we're aware of it or not, we're always creating with thoughts, beliefs, and words. And it's possible to miscreate from motives of ego or glory, and especially from fear and greed. And then often we just create by default. We don't hold any vision of what we want. We don't know our deepest desires or our highest intentions. To try to make things happen so that we'll feel better in the moment. And then we claim to be surprised innocent victims when a monster shows up that we don't really want. But it was our creation somehow. Of course, it's not an actual monster. But have you ever manifested something that wasn't what you thought it would be? A relationship? A job? You got what you wanted and then you didn't want it. There are some ways to uncreate our monsters. So, quick story. You know, I have this friend, Laura Shepherd, in California. She has two kids, and when the kids were little, their dad would pretend to be the tickle monster. And he would say, "I'm gonna get you," and he would come after them, and Robert, the little boy, would run and scream and laugh and throw things at the monster. Lindsay, the little girl, walked right up to the monster and hugged him. And he was completely disarmed. In the 1974 movie, Young Frankenstein, the mad doctor reaches the same conclusion. Love is the answer. This movie is a comedy spoof of the original Frankenstein. Gene Wilder plays Frankenstein's grandson. He's a doctor and a professor, terribly embarrassed by his grandfather's experiments. He believes there is no way to bring inanimate matter to life. He's so ashamed, he has even changed the pronunciation of his name to Frankenstein. And every time someone calls him Dr. Frankenstein, he corrects them. It's Frankenstein. But he's called to his grandfather's old castle, and he finds the laboratory where this work was done with notes on his grandfather's theories. And he's overcome by the same wild ambition. It might be possible to create life. He's galvanized by the idea. He too steals body parts from graves. Once again, the assistant mistakenly gets an abnormal brain, and they create a monster. Again, the monster is seen as dangerous. He's trapped, he's tranquilized, and locked up. But then young Frankenstein changes his approach. Dr. Frankenstein says, "Love is the only thing that can save this poor creature, and I am going to convince him that he is loved even at the cost of my own life." So he lets himself be locked into the dungeon with the monster to love him. Watch this.
Oh, that's funny. Hello, handsome. You're a good-looking fellow. Do you know that? People laugh at you. People hate you. But why do they hate you? Because they are jealous. Look at that boyish face. Look at that sweet smile. Do you want to talk about physical strength? Do you want to talk about sheer muscle? Do you want to talk about the Olympian ideal? You are a god! And listen to me. You are not evil. You are good! This is a nice boy. This is a good boy. This is a mother's angel. And I want the world to know, once and for all, and without any shame, that we love him. Oh. I'm going to teach you, I'm going to show you how to walk, how to speak, how to move, how to think. Together, you and I are going to make the greatest single contribution to science since the creation of fire.
Dr. Frankenstein, are you all right?
My name is Frankenstein!
Okay, there's still some ego there. But at least this doctor is making a joint effort with the monster. They're co-creators. And in loving the monster, he claims his own identity as Frankenstein. So, the first step to uncreating a monster, whatever it is to love it. Love and bless what is. You may be in a job you hate, bless it. You may be in a marriage that's in trouble, bless it. You can't get rid of something by hating it. In fact, resentment binds you to it. Whatever we fight, fights back. Including illness, remember, we talked about this in the healing series. Love it, bless it, and release it. That works for any monster in your life. Accept circumstances the way they are and bless them, even love them. Ask them what they've come to teach you. I know it sounds counterintuitive, but what we resist persists. Young Frankenstein did not want his monster destroyed. The first movie is all about force, kill him. This movie is about power as opposed to force. The power of love to transform. A Course in Miracles says all behavior is either an expression of love or a cry for love. When someone's acting like a monster, it's a cry for love. If you have a monster in your life, a person, a situation, the first step is to love it. Love what is, bless it, look for the good. The second is to change your thinking. What did you say, smart aleck? What? Oh. Cut that out. We're in church. So the second way to uncreate your monsters is to change your thinking. In Young Frankenstein, he changes his thinking by literally trading brains. Dr. Frankenstein loves his monster so much, he offers to give him part of his own brain. The villagers, however, do not love the monster. Once again, they want to kill him, so they show up at the laboratory with torches and pitchforks. So one more scene.
Thank you. The doctor said to allow 15 minutes. Not 1 second more or less.
How long now?
2 more minutes.
What's that noise?
I don't know.
What time is it?
Almost time.
These people about. I am the monster.
Yeah, I see that you are the monster.
For as long as I can remember, people have hated me. They looked at my face and my body, and they ran away in horror. In my loneliness, I decided that if I could not inspire love, which was my deepest hope, I would instead cause fear. I live because this poor, half-crazed genius has given me life. He alone held an image of me as something beautiful. And then, when it would have been easy enough to stay out of danger, he used his own body as a guinea pig to give me a calmer brain and a somewhat more sophisticated way of expressing myself.
Well, this is, of course, an entirely different situation. As the leader of this community, may I be the first to offer you my hand in friendship.
Thank you.
So the monster's grateful. This poor half-crazed genius has given me life. He alone held an image of me as something beautiful. Your creator sees beauty in you. You are made in the image of genius. You share its divine attributes. You are loved and seen as beautiful no matter what. Young Frankenstein recovers, by the way. He and the monster both marry beautiful women, and the movie ends with nobody dying. Okay, it ends with a lot of sex, but there are only certain scenes I can show in church. So what have we learned from Monster and Creator? The first step to disarming a monster is to hug it. Love what is. There's no hope of change as long as we resist. That only escalates anger, violence, or tickling. And then change your thinking. What if we change the monster label? Frankenstein called his monster handsome. Can we look for the good in anything? The same process we use for monsters we've created in our lives or attracted to us, we can use with our own demons too. Unfortunately, a lot of us, me, tend to react like Swiss villagers when we spot our own shortcomings. We label ourselves monstrous, believe the only solution is to kill what we don't like. But if the monster was crying for love, then so are we. The only love that really counts is from yourself for yourself. Other people can lavish love and praise on you, and if you don't believe you're worthy, you can't receive it. Love is the way we rejuvenate ourselves, galvanize ourselves, bring ourselves back to life. So your Halloween lesson for this week is, at some point, you have to turn around and hug the monster. You can't run from it all your life, then it just controls you. So what are some monsters you could love this week? People you know, situations you might dread, maybe even parts of yourself. Try loving the monsters and see whether things start to change. And here's the thing, they might never become pretty. In both movies and the book, the monster remains ugly, bolts in his neck, scars where he was patched together. But through the story, we start to love him, to hurt for him. We recognize and understand him because monsters are part of ourselves. We know deep down they are in pain, and they only need our love. So let's take these thoughts into meditation with Kit.
Let's just start as we always do by taking a big, deep, cleansing breath and centering ourselves. Putting our feet back flat on the floor. If you need to, shake out your hands a little bit. Feel your spine. Just settle into an alignment. And continue to breathe deeply into your heart space. If you have not already, bring to mind one of your monsters. And begin to take it in as not as a giant, overwhelming something to be conquered, something to be killed. But look for that one little space, that space that will begin inside of you, the space that will allow you to see a crack revealing light. And recognize that that light is simply a thought. And that thought can be changed. As the greatest gift in your life. What an incredible teacher. What an amazing guide. Surround you. Let it merge with your light. That light of love and compassion deep, deep compassion. Deep and abiding love. Breathe out love. Breathe in love, breathe out light. Take a deep breath in gratitude. Let's anchor that light and that love.